The God of Mischief is back and better than ever.
Loki.
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 Loki. Wow. Great to see you again.
Critics agree Loki Season 2 is...
marvelous.
Great.
And it's finally here.
How much do you know?
Let's assume I don't know much.
A mind-bending adventure. Spectacularly cinematic.
I've been waiting for a moment like this.
It surpasses all expectations.
A little over the top, don't you think?
I thought it was spot on.
Loki Season 2. Now streaming only on Disney+.
How are you now? Ladies and gentlemen, folks, I'm joined today for a special episode of Habs and Minded Extra by Anton Rasigard of the nation of Sweden, the fourth best hockey nation in the world. Anton, how are you doing?
I was going to say, I don't feel very Swedish anymore. I've been in Montreal now for 6 weeks. So, I was going to say, I'm more Montrealian now than you are, who have, left the province.
I did leave the province. That's correct. But my heart will always be there.
Yeah. Right? With your Canadians tattoo close to the heart and everything.
Absolutely. And speaking of the Canadians, of course, what are we here to talk about today? Well, we had a couple of things happen in Montreal Canadiens land. The first thing, and I think the biggest thing, is a trade. The Montreal Canadiens trade Jeff Petrie and Ryan Poehling to the Pittsburgh Penguins in exchange for Mike Matheson and a fourth round pick. Now, Anton, I'm going to go to you first. What do you think about that trade?
I wasn't sure what to think of it at first, because obviously, as a Habs fan, we tend to be quite unrealistic in our expectations. We want everything back in a haul, and we want to give nothing in return. And if you just looked at the landscape for trades in the last few weeks, well, basically since the draft, we've seen Brent Burns be traded for, a bag of chips. We've seen Max Pacioretty be traded for even less than that. So, in fact, when you look at it, and especially when you start to go into advanced analytics and everything, this looks like a really solid piece of business. You get, a 34-year-old Jeff Petrie who wanted to go back to the U.S., out, and he had 3 years left on his contract. And if we look at, even if we played better during Martin Saint-Louis, it's still a possibility that, being 35, 36, it wouldn't have worked out on a rebuilding Habs. And then you get 28-year-old Mike Matheson back. He has a contract on 4.675 or something for four more years. And he's a former, Kent Hughes is a former agent, right? So I'm guessing they know him pretty well, and his advanced analytics data looks really solid.
Yeah, and you mentioned the analytics, right? I mean, I like most people, I think I mostly remembered Mike Matheson for his Florida days when things really did not go well for him in Florida. He got a lot better after he went to Pittsburgh. I'm looking at the micro stats right now from last season. He was 92nd percentile in terms of denial, so defensive zone entry attempts by the other team. 92nd percentile in terms of denying those, 96th percentile in terms of possession entry rate, 96th percentile in terms of rush shots, 82nd percentile in terms of carry entries. A lot of these underlying numbers paint the picture of a player that's got a lot more value than we might have thought. I mean, when I first heard the trade, Poehling and Petrie going, and we're just getting Matheson in a fourth rounder, my initial reaction when I heard that there was a pick, I was like, this better be a first round pick.
Yeah,
but then when I took a look at those underlying numbers, right, took a look at the analytics, I was like, man, there's a much better player there in Mike Matheson than I thought there was. So all of a sudden, I don't really care about that fourth round pick. I mean, it's nice to have. It's a chip that you can
especially as a trade chip.
Yeah, it's a chip you can maybe use in a trade, or who knows? I mean, sometimes you can get some gems in the fourth round of the NHL draft as well. But I think the big thing here is that they managed to shed salary without necessarily kneecapping their defense. Matheson can play next year if you want him to, and he could actually contribute on this team. And is he better than Jeff Petrie? I mean, I don't think the numbers necessarily suggest that, but they do suggest that he has the capability of taking on the same type of minutes that Jeff Petrie would normally take. So you didn't kneecap yourself, And most importantly, Anton, you mentioned this already. We didn't have to pay to get rid of the guy or get rid of him for literally nothing. You look at the trade market right now when it comes to defensemen, like you said, Brent Burns, bag of chips, Max Pacioretty, literally future considerations, apparently the most popular thing in the NHL right now.
Yeah.
People are paying money or paying assets in order to shed salary. Montreal managed to shed some salary, not a whole lot, because obviously we took on some back with Mike Matheson, but we managed to free up some cap space without having to actually pay assets to do that. So I think, you know, as reserved as the reactions are on Habs Twitter right now, I say reserved, you know, a little bit conservatively there, maybe liberally. I don't know. Some people are upset about this trade, but I think when we look back at this trade in a year, 2 years, I think it's going to look pretty good.
Exactly. But it's mainly because you want that prime asset coming back. And if it's a 28-year-old former first rounder who, as you said, didn't do very well in Florida, the team that he was drafted by, then you look at it and just see the cap hit almost $4-5 million. And you think like, well, I mean, he signed four more years. What are we going to do with him? But as you get into it, as you said, like, as you start to go into more depth when it comes to Mike Matheson, like, I didn't watch a lot of Pittsburgh last season. I didn't know that he had a breakout season. Apparently he really did. And as you said, when you look at his denial rate and everything, it's really high class, actually. And because I remember, like, I wrote in our internal Slack chat right when the trade happened that, well, of course, they're taking on Mike Matheson and they're just going to flip him at the deadline, right? Because he has a lower cap hit, so it will be easier to move. And he's kind of like a Christian Dvorak. He signed to reasonable money for an extended period of time. And that means that he can be a valuable, you know, contributor in the middle of a lineup somewhere. But now, when I look at it, I actually think he's someone who the Canadians can use for a bit of veteran presence on a pretty young team. And especially with the connection that he has to Kent Hughes already, and Kent Hughes knowing which kind of character they bring in and everything. And I was watching the press conference in, you know, a little bit later than it was, you know, than live. And I heard Kent Hughes say that we wanted a defenseman in return. And that obviously narrowed the market as well for a Petry trade. If you wanted to make sure that you got a defenseman who actually had played in the league, not, you know, another Justin Barron or, you know, another young guy coming in there, but actually someone who can be a steady presence for a Jordan Harris, you know, Corey Schoeneman, even if he's a slightly older, he's still, you know, a rookie, and a Justin Barron. And now he got that. And what's even better is Mike Matheson should probably be at the top of his career right now, being 28 and having 40 more years signed, which means that he will be signed until 32. And if he can continue to work as well as he did in Pittsburgh last season while playing, you know, with not the best, I don't know which pairing he had, but it wasn't, you know, it wasn't Chris Letang or someone like that from what I saw. And, you know, if he can work with a Justin Barron, for example, and free up an offensively minded defenseman in Justin Barron, that would be great for the Habs development.
Yeah. And you got to put him with a bit more of a mobile partner as well. I mean, he is a good skater, but because he likes to really shut down the entries there, and he's kind of stepping up against forwards at the blue line, you want somebody who can cover those dump ins. Cause, you know, I talked about the underlying numbers, but his numbers when it comes to recovering pucks that are dumped in by the opposition are not great, because he really tries to meet them at the blue line. So giving him somebody like a Justin Barron could be a good idea. And like you said, having somebody around with that experience, that mentorship. And then another thing that was really interesting in Ken Hughes's press conference, right? He mentioned that Pittsburgh didn't want to trade Matheson. They wanted to hang on to him. So they've been talking about this for a little bit. And, you know, I asked the question on Twitter, and of course our buddy Jared Book came back to me and said, you know, the guy they were probably trying to shoehorn into that deal was John Marino.
Yeah.
Of course, they just got rid of John Marino as well to free themselves up some cap, trading him in New Jersey. And, you know, again, looking at the underlying numbers, looking at salaries, Matheson's a way better option for the Habs. Marino's a little bit younger.
Yeah.
Right. He's I think he's born in 97. I'm not sure. I'd have to go double check.
Yeah,
that.
He is.
He is perfect. So a little bit younger, right? A couple of years younger, but signed around the same thing. He's got a cap hit of 4.4. And this is a guy who had 25 points last year, whereas Matheson had 31. I mean, Matheson, I think, has better offensive upside, which you don't necessarily need out of your defenseman, but the Habs have those young players coming up. They need to have somebody who's got that skill, who can move the puck, who can contribute on offense to try and mentor them, because they got to be able to build a more competitive team over the course of several years, over the course of this rebuild. And part of that is going to be getting more production out of your defense.
Yeah. And as you say, like, I mean, basically, yeah, you could have gone for the younger option in Marino with the hopes that he could be, you know, a Mike Matheson down the line, like in 3 years or something, that he could have the same, you know, advanced stats or whatever. But that's, you know, we come back to the Family Guy mystery box quite often here, because like you kind of look at younger guys and just see, well, look at all this potential. I mean, if Ryan Poehling, for example, may he rest in peace in Pittsburgh now, if he becomes, you know, if he becomes what he could be when he was drafted in 2017, he could be, you know, a viable top six option. Well, I mean, the potential will always be there. Like we've seen that with, you know, someone like Mike Matheson this season breaking out at the age of 27. But, you know, there was someone writing on, I think it was on Twitter now, for example, that you can look at the trajectory of two players, Jeff Petrie being 34 and having had a down season. That could be, you know, just a sign of things to come, right? While Matheson, you know, he's really only had one really great season, but that could also be a sign of things to come. At least he's trending upwards. And I think for a rebuilding Habs team, getting someone in who is trending upwards and is in that age where you are experienced, but you're not on the verge of retiring, I think that's pretty great for a rebuilding team, which probably will be among the, you know, among the worst teams in the NHL for next season as well. But as I said, he's signed for 4 more years, so he could be there for an extended period of time.
Yeah.
And he's a local boy as well.
Indeed. He's a West Island boy from, yeah. I think he's from Pointe Claire.
Yeah.
So you get the benefit of having that hometown guy. And honestly, looks like somebody that could contribute next year. And again, there's a lot less risk for Montreal considering that they're getting a longer term contract because the dollar is smaller, right? We know that the cap is already starting to go up as it was initially expected to pre-pandemic. So now we're going to see that cap get a little bit bigger. So you have options. You can keep him around. Maybe he's part of the rebuild. Maybe he becomes a veteran presence on your blue line that you keep around for the entire duration of that contract. Or you mentioned this earlier, right? They could flip him at the deadline. I think his cap hit is probably easier for you to flip at the deadline, even with the term, than Petrie's would have been. And I do think there's going to be some teams. I said this about Petrie and I'll say it about Matheson too. There's going to be some teams that are going to be desperate for D-men around the deadline. And if Montreal, you know, goes through most of the season heading up to the deadline and things are, I guess, going decently with Matheson, but they don't see him as part of that future, then you can explore some trades at the deadline. And I think you'll get a little bit more in return for somebody like Matheson than you would have for Petrie. I think both of them would have been really good deadline trade options because I think either one is going to net you a pretty good return. But I just think it would be better with a Ben Chiarot return is what you're aiming for, right?
Yeah.
You look at that one, and Ben Chiarot was on an expiring contract, of course. It was a little bit easier to get rid of because you can eat some salary and you don't care. You're not going to be eating that salary forever. You're not really going to be able to eat salary on Matheson, but you know what? I think that if it comes to that, they're going to have options of teams that are going to be interested and teams that maybe, just maybe, give you that Ben Chiarot-esque haul that you never should have had in the first place. And, you know, it kickstarts the rebuild even a little bit more.
Yeah, I was going to open that discussion as well, because you're mentioning both Petrie and, you know, and Matheson as possible, you know, trade chips if, you know, if they were Montreal players by the deadline. I want to open the discussion as well about Joel Edmondson, because this opens up having Matheson signed until 2026 means that Joel Edmondson could possibly be more expendable for, you know, an aspiring team. He's already won a cup with St. Louis and, you know, he's got some pretty good experience. He's 29 years old and he has only 2 years left on his deal as of this summer. And he signed on a, you know, team friendly deal of 3.5 million annual average, you know. And with this trade for Mike Matheson, all of a sudden you have both Edmondson and Matheson as potential, you know, veteran presences on the blue line. And if Matheson is difficult to move because of, you know, having a long-term contract and almost 5 million in cap hit, Edmondson should be probably quite easy because you get a year and a little more for him, of him, during the deadline for a reasonable cap hit.
And only at, 3.5 on Joel Edmondson. That's a really good point.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't even think of the fact that it definitely opens up some other options if they want to move a defenseman at the deadline.
Yeah.
They definitely needed to add a defenseman. And I think they needed to get rid of Ryan Poehling as well, because Ryan Poehling, him being moved off, it opened up the door for them to give Rem Pitlick a new contract, which was the second thing that we need to talk about today. Two-year contract for Rem Pitlick at $1.1 million AAV per year. Got to say, I absolutely love that deal. Anton, what do you think?
No, exactly. Like, nothing more said. I think it was a bold move to let him go to UFA, because obviously you don't know if he's going to get a decent offer from somewhere else. But I think that for Rem Pitlick as well, he felt like he broke out in Montreal last season. They have a young up-and-coming team, and I think it was the best alternative for him, even if he probably got a little less money than he would have wanted after a breakout season. But as a former agent, you know, Kent Hughes could just show him, you know, advanced analytics and just show him his shooting percentage and say that, well, Rem, you're probably not going to do as well next season, and just good to, you know, have a bridge contract here and just show everyone that you're the real deal, and that it wasn't just a fluke last season. And for $1.1 million, he becomes... he's one of those players in the middle there. He's not super young. He's born 97, I think, like Marino. And so he becomes one of those middlemen who can be a bridge player for the years before we have a Joshua Roy or a Sean Farrell coming into the lineup in a year or two.
Yeah, it's a perfect bridge, right? And at 1.1, you're not breaking the bank whatsoever.
No,
this has the potential. I said this, I don't know how many times in the bottom 6 minutes last season. He has the potential to be the new Paul Byron for Montreal off waivers, right? Obviously, they did overpay Byron a little bit once they had to. So you hope you don't do that with Rem Pitlick as well. But, I mean, he had 37 points in 66 games between two different teams last year.
Yep.
26 of those points were scored with Montreal after being picked up off waivers. So these bargain bin finds, you know, it doesn't happen that often where you pick somebody up off waivers, they go into your lineup and they do that well.
Right. Joel Armia was basically a waiver find as well, since he was just thrown to get rid of a contract, Steve Mason's contract. So, like, for Montreal and for, you know, and now it wasn't Mark. Was Mark Bergevin fired when Rem Pitlick was brought on? I don't remember.
You know what? Now I can't even remember.
No, I was going to say, like, I don't remember if it was Gorton's first move bringing Rem. No, because Gorton's first move was bringing Cale Clegg off waivers, and that didn't work out as well.
No, not nearly as well as Rem Pitlick.
No, exactly. But I don't know if it was Gorton or Bergevin. But like for Montreal, it's worked out quite well with these with these you know, waiver fines or whatever, getting a throw in or something. Then, as you said with Byron, and that works for Armia as well. You ended up slightly overpaying them, and especially giving them more term than maybe you would have wanted. And that's why this deal with Rem Pitlick looks really good, because you could have just been, if it was a more conservatively minded general manager who wasn't aware of, you know, analytics and everything, he probably would have qualified Rem Pitlick and just hoped that everything would resolve itself, you know, and if nothing else, they would have, you know, gotten a year of arbitration deal of like three something million or whatever for Rem Pitlick. Yeah. But since they, you know, didn't care to qualify him and are now able to resign him on a much lower average deal, it just, yeah, it's a sly move by a rookie general manager. And I really like it. If Rem Pitlick continues to evolve, he will still only be 27 by the time his contract expires. And then you could, you know, think about whether he will be a part of the long-term future, or otherwise he's, you know, a trade chip. So,
yeah. I mean, you can't do any better as a deadline trade chip than somebody who's only making 1.1, because his deadline salary is going to be negligible. So if he has even close, like you mentioned the shooting percentage, right? He's got an absurd shooting percentage. That's one of the reasons why not doing the qualifying offer was smart, because if you ended up in arbitration, he did it's entirely possible he could go in that 3 million range, because I really don't think arbitration is going to look at shooting percentage and go, hey, that's not sustainable. That's why you scored 9 goals last year. And then another 6 with Minnesota. So we're going to give you the 3 million. And then all of a sudden, like, you're clearly overpaying him, right? You don't want to have that money sunk into bottom 6 guys. And they've learned that the hard way in some other places. So that's one of the reasons why it was that smart for them to do that. And then on top of that, absolutely, he's got crazy, crazy deadline trade value if he puts up even close to the same numbers that he was. If he scores at even less than the rate that he was, like 26 and 46 was what he put up with Montreal. If he maintains that, his trade value at the deadline is going to be massive. If he comes even close to it, it's going to be massive. Like, and even if he doesn't, right? If he puts up a 20-point season before the deadline, he's going to have some value to some teams that are going into the playoffs. He's a fast player, keeps a lot of pace, definitely a good addition to almost any bottom six in the league, except
and
for the more.
And he's adaptable. He can play both in the middle and on the wing. So.
Bingo.
Yeah.
You got versatility there. You've got speed. There's definitely going to be some interest in him at the deadline. But of course, you also, same as you do with Matheson, have the option of evaluating things and deciding, you know, is this a player that we want to keep? I said it again, I don't know how many times. I'd have to go back and listen to all my bottom 6 minutes from last year, which I'm not going to do. But I want to say at least 4 or 5 times I gave him player of the game. And in those players of the game, each time I always wondered, like, you know, is this a player that we try to keep? And my conclusion for the most part was, yeah, I think we should try to keep him because I don't think he's going to cost a lot. And I think he's a great addition to the bottom six. They went ahead and they did that. And to do it at 1.1, I love it.
Yeah. So basically you have added Rym Pytlick, who you already know, an established, you know, asset for the Canadiens, and Mike Matheson, who is also an established asset since Kent Hughes knows him from being his former agent. And you've subtracted Jeff Petrie, who didn't want to play in Canada anymore, and Ryan Poehling, who never really broke into the team. So what do you think? Is it a win or a loss for the Canadiens?
I'm willing to call it a win right now, right? Yep. I think when it comes to a trade like this, you kind of got to wait, because Jeff Petrie could go to Pittsburgh next year and score 70 points. And then
he's never done that in his career.
I know he hasn't, but he's going to Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh, a very structured team. I think they're definitely in a better position than Montreal.
I was going to say, he's not a very strong power play contributor.
Mm-hmm. But if he gets out there and he gets to play with Crosby or Malkin all the time, how many assists is he going to end up getting just at 5-on-5, right?
Yeah, that's true.
He moves the puck up ice. He gets the puck to those guys, and then they're going to do what they do, right?
Yeah.
I think as long as he's out there and he gets the right, you know, quality of teammates, which in Pittsburgh, you stand a pretty damn good chance of getting, especially when he is ostensibly going to be on their top pair. I could see him. I don't know about 70, right? I'm just throwing the number 70 out there, but I could see him, you know, kissing 60, maybe 65, maybe even 70. And then we might look back on it. We might go, well, look, we gave away a 70 point defenseman, but you have to look at it through the context of, he's a 70 point or a 60 point, whatever he ends up getting, defenseman on Pittsburgh, not on Montreal. Right. That being said, of course, Matheson didn't score that many points in Pittsburgh. So it begs the question of which one of those two players ends up being better. But at the end of the day, Jeff Petrie wanted out. So I think you have to call that trade a win, because they didn't have to give up assets to get rid of him. They were able to free up some cap space, and they still got assets back, including a defenseman that can kind of eat some of those minutes that Petrie was eating. And the last thing that I think we might want to just chat about for 2 minutes before we end this thing is, what does this mean? Now they got a little bit more cap space, so they used some of it on Rym Pytlick, obviously. But we also know that there's another iron in the fire, another iron that's been talked about ad nauseum on Twitter. Everybody's talking about it. And that's the trade for Pierre-Luc Dubois with the Winnipeg Jets.
Yes.
Do you think, I'm just asking you at this point, do you think that these moves suggest any more validity to that trade? Are we going to see that trade? Do you think that they're trying to, you know, slowly build up some cap space so that they would have enough room to sign him afterwards?
I definitely think that Kent Hughes and Jeff Gordon are interested in Pierre-Luc Dubois because he fits the profile of what the Canadians would want to have behind or beside Nick Suzuki as a 1A, 1B centerman or a second line centerman. The fact that he's local and that he really wants to play for Montreal, we see all these. I think it was The Athletic had a combined article now with Arpan Basu and Murat from Winnipeg, going into detail why Pierre-Luc Dubois to Montreal makes a lot of sense, and the fact that he has 2 years left before he can become a UFA and basically select wherever he wants to go. And there are rumors, I don't know if they were already confirmed, that he was at the draft in Montreal because he was mm-hmm. expecting a deal to be done. And that also, you know, just adds to the fact that Pierre-Luc Dubois probably wants to be a Montreal Canadian. If it becomes reality this summer, that would be great. But it also depends on, we've seen now from Kent Hughes that he doesn't want to give up just anything or a ridiculous price, because obviously Pierre-Luc Dubois is an RFA right now, so you could offer sheet mm-hmm. him, but it would probably be quite expensive, and you risk the possibility as well of the Winnipeg matching and all of a sudden maybe signing him up for several years. You could also see Winnipeg waiting for a higher offer from another team, but the other teams probably know at this point that Dubois mainly wants to play in Montreal, and that means they can probably only sign him for 2, maybe 3 years, yep. and then he will hit UFA. That also means that they don't want to trade a, you know, prime package for him if they can't have him in the long term. And so the question is just when it becomes reality, how long can Winnipeg wait? What kind of offer can Winnipeg offer him as, you know, a potential re-signing phase? Will he even want to negotiate a new contract in Winnipeg, or will he just wait for and stay away from the market and just wait for Kevin Cheveldayoff to become desperate and just basically call up Kent Hughes and ask what the best offer actually is? And we know that Montreal, is it one thing that Montreal has right now? It's trade chips, right? We have yep. Josh Anderson signed to a long deal. We have Paul Byron, whose contract is up next year. And, you know, he's a speedster that could add something to your bottom six. And Christian Dvorak signed until 2025, right? So on a reasonable deal. So, and then all these young kids, if you want to trade a Matthias Norlander, for example, or Jaden Struble, or, you know, one of the left-handed defensemen, there are assets that could potentially entice Kevin Cheveldayoff and the Jets to make a deal before it's too late and Dubois' value just drops.
Yeah, and they might have, I mean, this is another thing we talked about, right? I don't think that the deal today has anything to do with that potential deal, because I don't think Petrie was going to be involved in the Dubois trade anyways.
Well, everything is kind of, you know, attached when it comes to, like, you know, dropping yeah. cap yeah. and everything, like, but I understand what you're saying, that Petrie was probably never going to be a part of Jets in like a limbo situation anyway.
Yeah. All this to say, I just don't think that Kent Hughes is done, and I don't think that he's ready to take that iron out of the fire. I think that it's an entirely realistic possibility that we're going to see Dubois as a Montreal Canadian before this season starts. I mean, that draft story about him being there apparently is 100% real. Apparently he was there, like, with his family, and they thought when that trade got announced by Gary Bettman for the 13th overall pick, they thought that 13th overall pick was going to end up being the additional piece that Winnipeg wanted in the trade. So, oh, like, shit. Apparently that's how close this thing was at one point. Apparently there was an offer for 3 players in exchange for Pierre-Luc Dubois, and I guess at the 11th hour, Winnipeg wanted somebody different, and apparently they want somebody untouchable. Now, we don't know who that untouchable player is.
Like, who do you think is untouchable in a rebuilding Habs?
On a rebuilding Montreal Canadiens, I'd say really right now, for me, there's basically 2, maybe 3 guys who are untouchable. Nick Suzuki, Cole Caulfield, and I would argue Brendan Gallagher. I think
you were going to say Joshua Roy, but...
Well, listen, I would never trade Joshua Roy personally, but is he untouchable? Of course not. I don't think anybody's untouchable at this point, other than the 3 that I mentioned.
Yeah, I don't think Gallagher is untouchable either.
I don't, like, the thing with Gallagher is he's a leader on this team, right? And I still think even with the raise that he got, I think especially, like, people are looking at his production last year and going, oh, he shouldn't be untouchable. Well, you know what? Give him a full year under Marty St. Louis. I think you're going to see a major uptick in his production next season. I think that I really believe it. So for me, I wouldn't trade him. Now, that being said, it depends on the deal, right? But the only true untouchables are the two that I mentioned first, Suzuki and Caulfield. So I think what I think is the player that they're trying to get is they're trying to get Caulfield. I think they're trying to make an argument that, oh yeah, well, sure, he did good in the second half of the year, but that was a flash in the pan. Let us take over. And you know, you guys should be probably expecting more what he did in the first half of the season rather than what he did in the second half. Yeah, I was
going to ask, like, who are they going to put with him? They don't have any forwards anymore in Winnipeg. But like, also,
he would look great on Pierre-Luc Dubois' wing, I'm sure.
Yeah, exactly. No, I was going to argue as well that I would imagine that the Habs see Caden Gooley as semi-untouchable at this point as well, because having traded Alexander Romanov and not knowing what you really have in Jordan Harris and Matthias Norlander and Justin Barron and Logan Mayu and all of these other guys, Caden Gooley looks like the most sure deal. He looks like someone who could be a new Mike Matheson, Joel Edmondson, whatever, you know, that type of defenseman, a new Shea Weber, or if you really want to stretch it. And I would argue that he's probably the best defensive prospect that Canadians have at the moment. And I don't think you want to trade that if you don't absolutely know that you're getting a fantastic deal in return.
Yeah, I mean, look, the reason I wanted to bring this up as our last thing is because I think we're going to be doing another podcast pretty soon. And I think that next podcast that we do, it's probably going to be about that trade. I think there's way too much smoke.
We know that you're the Oracle, so.
I am, right? And
whatever you say happens.
Eventually. Sometimes it takes a while, right? I did spend, you know, several years trying to get rid of Bergevin before they ended up making that one true. So,
we needed the final appearance first, right? We needed you to start with bottom 6 minutes during the playoffs there, so that you could really hammer in your testament or whatever. So you could really become the Oracle, and then everything happened pretty quickly. Everyone got fired just as you wanted to. Ben Chiarot was traded just as you wanted.
So we'll have to maybe revisit this again afterwards. Anton, thank you very much for joining me for this.
Pleasure.
You've been listening to Absent Minded Extra. Thank you as always for listening. And of course, à la prochaine.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.